Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we are in the section which is dealing with identifying and glorifying Srimad Bhagavatam. We identified Srimad Bhagavatam fairly clearly, and then there was some glorification from Garuda Purana. Haribol, is there a battery or something? Are you recording now? Oh, you are? Okay. All right, so then 21 and 22 were glorification based on the two and a half or so verses from Garuda Purana. Important verses which are pointing out some very important, glorious characteristics of the Bhagavatam. And we discussed about how Srimad Bhagavatam is a commentary on the Gayatri. Hare Krishna. How it's based on the Gayatri, how it explains the Gayatri, and in that way, we understand it explains all the Vedic scriptures, actually, because that Gayatri is the fundamental mantra in all the Vedas. It's a Rig Veda mantra, and there were certain statements there by Srila Jiva Goswami, how it's an extremely important mantra, and it really expresses in a nutshell the message of the four Vedas. So the first verse of Srimad Bhagavatam is expanding on that and establishing the meaning of that Gayatri mantra. And then the whole of the rest of Srimad Bhagavatam is essentially explaining that first verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, you could say. So in that sense, Srimad Bhagavatam is explaining the Gayatri mantra and is therefore explaining all the Vedic scriptures. So these things were discussed then in the context of the Garuda Purana's glorification of Srimad Bhagavatam. Now we're going on to subsection C, in which Srila Jiva Goswami refers to different commentaries on Srimad Bhagavatam written by different people and the implications of those different commentaries. This goes through from verse 23 to the beginning of verse 24. Let us read. I think we'll just read. Anyway, we'll read 23 first. 23.1. Thus, it has been said, even though there are many other revealed scriptures, that this Purana has now arisen like the sun for those who have lost their sight in the age of Kali. That is the famous verse, Krishne Swadamo Pagate Dharma Jnana Dibisaha, and so on. From this comparison to the sun, we can deduce that without the help of the Bhagavatam, other scriptures cannot accurately depict reality. In the course of Sri Hayashesha Pancharatra's description of various scriptures, the Tantra, called Tantra Bhagavat, is listed as a kind of commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam. Quite a few actual commentaries on the Bhagavatam are currently available, including Sri Hanumad Bhashya, Vasana Bhashya, Sambandokti Vidvat Kamadenu, Tattva Dipika, Bhavarta Dipika, Paramahansa Priya, and Shuka Hridaya, as well as a number of monographs on specific topics, Muktafala Hari Leela, Bhakti Ratnavali, and so on. These prominent works have been composed by various enlightened authorities, each commenting according to the opinions of his own school. 23.2. The section on charity in Hemadri's book, which is called Chaturvarga Chintamani, while discussing the giving of Puranas as presents, praises the Bhagavatam by quoting the Matsya Purana's enumeration of its special features. This was in 19.2, the Matsya Purana's quoted there, talking about, among other things, the value of giving it on the full moon day in a certain month. And in the appendix of his work, under the heading of Defining the Significance of Various Times, Hemadri cites, while defining the principles of religious life for Kali Yuga, the text which begins, Advanced souls have great respect for Kali Yuga, Srimad Bhagavatam 11.5.36. Identifying this as a verse of the Bhagavatam, he acknowledges that only the religious principles enunciated in the Bhagavatam are suitable for the Kali Yuga, Kali Age. In another work of his, Samvatsara Pradipa, Hemadri quotes the passage of several verses cited by us above from the Skanda Purana. That was 20.1, I think. 22.5, sorry. 22.5, that series of verses from Skanda Purana, which begins, what is the use of hundreds or thousands? If you remember that one. That was a very dynamic verse, saying that it's on page 35, or series of verses. Anyone who doesn't keep Bhagavatam in his house in Kali Yuga, even if he's a Brahmin, he's worse than a dog eater. So then, having quoted those several verses, Hemadri then inserts in his text several verses of the Bhagavatam, which he recommends for copying out by hand to purify oneself from all the defects of this age. So, that is all about Hemadri. We'll explain a little bit about Hemadri shortly. That was focusing on Hemadri. 23.3 is going to focus on Shankaracharya and his approach to Srimad Bhagavatam. Shankaracharya, known to be an incarnation of Lord Sankarshan, considered the message of Srimad Bhagavatam far superior to his own conception of merging with the Supreme, inasmuch as it reveals the pleasure pastimes of pure devotion and other special truths. Because the personality of Godhead wanted to hide himself and accomplish other purposes, Shankaracharya, on his order, promulgated the philosophy of oneness, which we will discuss later on. Nonetheless, Shankaracharya was anxious not to disturb the Bhagavatam, the original authorless commentary on the Vedanta, by depicting in his Govindashtaka and other works events described only by the Bhagavatam, such as the Queen of Raja's amazement at seeing the total form of the universe and Krishna stealing the clothes of the unmarried girls of Raja, he kept himself at a respectful distance and merely touched the Bhagavatam to assure the success of his own words. Just to get some mercy, in other words, he may have made a few references. Okay, so let us just talk a little bit about that. So the idea here is that many commentaries have been written by many people because the Bhagavatam is so important. It is not that there are so many commentaries on so many other of the Vedic scriptures. But in the case of the Bhagavatam, there are many, many commentaries. So in 23.1, he lists out some. Even he says that Tantra Bhagavat, which is a Smriti scripture, Tantra Bhagavat. It's part of the Vedic scriptures. Is a type of commentary on the Bhagavatam. Now, unfortunately, that is no longer existent. Although Gopi Puranadana Prabhu said that there's some society in Calcutta which claims to have a copy of it, but that it's not really sure whether it is or not. So Tantra Bhagavat, it may well have disappeared off the face of the earth. Then he lists a few more commentaries. Now, unfortunately, most of them have also disappeared. The only ones which, at least to my knowledge, have not disappeared are the Bhavarta Dipika. That is Sridhar Swami's commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam. That is still existing. And Paramahansa Priya. That is a commentary by someone called Vopadev. Vopadeva. So he wrote that commentary. And he also wrote Mukta Phala and Hari Leela, which are mentioned there as being monographs written on specific topics. So they're not complete commentaries, but they're just focusing on certain particular aspects of Srimad Bhagavatam. Hari Leela is just describing certain of Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan, for example. Now, unfortunately, at least as far as I'm aware, these other commentaries which Jiva Goswami has mentioned here, and which he says at that time, 450 or so years ago, were currently available. As far as I'm aware, they're not currently available. As far as I'm aware, none of the others are. Perhaps there may be one or two, but to my knowledge, the only ones that are available, complete commentaries, are Bhavarta Dipika and Paramahansa Priya. Yeah, of course, we have our commentaries by our Gaudiya Vaishnava Acharyas, but these were prior to those days. Jiva Goswami has written his commentary, Sanatan Goswami, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, and so on. So it is not like we are short of commentaries, but from those days, like Vedic times, or from the Vedic times till the time of Lord Chaitanya, these other commentaries were available. And they are very prominent, written by very prominent people. Vopadev lived in the 13th century. Oh, there's another commentary which isn't mentioned here. It is mentioned in 24.1, which we haven't quite got to yet. That is Madhvacharya's commentary. That is still existing, as far as I'm aware. That is called, what is that called? The Tantra Bhagavat. Interesting point. Tantra Bhagavat is, we only really know about it through mention of it made in Madhvacharya's commentary. That's basically how we know that there's this kind of commentary called Tantra Bhagavat, because Madhvacharya mentions it. Madhvacharya's commentary is called Bhagavat Tatparya Niranaya. That is still existing, as far as I'm aware. So now 23.2 talks about Hemadri's book, which is called Chatur Varga Chintamani. Hemadri is very famous and widely accepted, to the point that Jiva Goswami is mentioning his words here at some length, and a little later on he's going to refer to Hemadri again, I think. So he was a big, like, Vedic authority, living also in the 13th century, the 1200s, back in those days. And this book, Chaturvarga Chintamani, is kind of Karmakandya, Dharma Shastra. Dharma Shastra deals with vows, charity, as Jiva Goswami is referring to that part here, Shraddha ceremonies, the different rituals for funerals and after funerals and so on like that, and considerations of time when you're performing different ceremonies and different duties, how different times, what's auspicious and what's inauspicious. So even though it's not really so transcendental, but he is regarded as being a big Vedic authority of fairly recent days. So here, Jiva Goswami is referring to him and how he has glorified Srimad Bhagavatam in this Chaturvarga Chintamani and one other verse of his. So he is big Vedic authority, and in his works, he is glorified Bhagavatam, that Matsya Purana verse which says that you should put the Bhagavatam on a golden throne, lion throne, and give it in charity like that on the full moon day of a certain month, then you'll go back to Godhead. So Himadri acknowledges this. And as Jiva Goswami says here, he says that nothing is really going to help people so much other than the religious principles in Srimad Bhagavatam. And he acknowledges that very powerful sequence of verses from Skanda Purana about the importance of Srimad Bhagavatam. 23.3 is interesting because here, at some length, he's talking about Shankaracharya. Shankaracharya was ordered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead to appear. That is there in Skanda Purana. Lord Vishnu tells Lord Shiva, Swagamai kalpitais tvam cha, janan mad vimokan kuru, mam cha gopaya yena syat, srishtir esho tarotara. O Shiva, make people averse to me by writing speculative scriptures and thus hiding my glories. In this way, the world's population will increase. You know, obviously, everyone's going to fall into illusion by all this speculation and the Supreme Personality of Godhead becoming camouflaged. But the end result of that is going to be an increase in unwanted population. And Kali Yuga is going to really become strongly established. So therefore, Lord Shiva appeared as Shankaracharya. And, you know, Lord Shiva is the presiding deity of the mode of ignorance. So, Bhaktivinoda Thakur comments in one of his books that seeing Lord Shiva has like the entire Shakti of the mode of ignorance at his disposal, that is his specialty. So his philosophy, that philosophy of Shankaracharya's, Mayavad philosophy, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, it perfectly and completely embodies the complete potency of the mode of ignorance. So therefore, unless you are on the level of Mahabhagavat, if you read it as it is, then you'll probably fall down. Yeah. So Shankaracharya, even though he commented on Bhagavad Gita, for example, and the 11 most important Upanishads and so on, but he didn't say anything about Srimad Bhagavatam, other than maybe, as Jiva Goswami says, touching it. Maybe one or two little references just to get some mercy from Srimad Bhagavatam. Otherwise, out of respect, he didn't deal with Srimad Bhagavatam. In fact, here, Jiva Goswami mentions Shankaracharya's Govindashtakam, which is very nice. It is an ashtakam, means it's eight verses glorifying Krishna, and particularly his pastimes in Vrindavan. I'll just read a verse or two. How about this? Please bow down to Govinda, supreme bliss personified. He is most beautiful. He is the original cause of all causes, Karana Karanam. And he has no cause. He is free from all superimpositions of illusion. He danced wonderfully on the hoods of the Kaliya serpent and the Yamuna. Though he is time, he is beyond all divisions of time. He knows everything. He destroys the defects of Kali Yuga. And he is the source of past, present, and future. Doesn't sound like Mayavad, does it? Because it's not. No, he's glorifying Krishna. And, you know, there's eight or nine verses, including a Phala Stuti here, in which he says that if you chant these verses, you will attain Lord Govinda, the supreme, everlasting bliss of the heart. So, he's a devotee, actually. But he was ordered to do like this, so he did it as a matter of duty. But it was not that he was really into being a Mayavadi. I haven't heard that. Well, you know, they're into twisting things. And, you know, if you look through this, then you'd see that to come out with such an interpretation, you'd have to really give it a good twist. Yeah. Because it's pretty self-evident from the Sanskrit and everything. Yeah. Well, you know, it just means that it's like, it's coming from the Lord, that we know, and he knows that also. But it doesn't have an author like you or me, some person who scratched their head and, you know, tried to figure out some story or something. So in that sense, it's authorless. And it's eternal also. So even when the Lord breathes it out to Lord Brahma, or imparts it to his heart, it is not that the Lord had created it then. This has been existing eternally. There was no real beginning. So in that sense, the Lord is just the speaker, like the original speaker. In fact, Garuda Purana said that. The original speaker is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, not exactly the author. So let us go on to 24.1. which is the last verse here in this section about how various important people have commented on Srimad Bhagavatam, or in the case of Shankaracharya, not commented, but of course in this Govindashtakam, it's sort of like a comment, or at least it's a glorification of the Bhagavatam's message. They don't, eh? Vitala, oh, I see. Well, Vitala is the same. Right. So 24.1, Sri Madhvacharya Charan was a direct disciplic descendant of Shankaracharya. Initially, he was initiated into that line as a Mayavadi. But becoming an adherent of Vaishnav thought after reading Srimad Bhagavatam, he was concerned that other Vaishnavs might be influenced by the kind of commentaries on it written by other followers of Shankara, like Punyaranya. According to the accounts of saintly devotees, Sri Madhva therefore wrote his own explanation of the Bhagavatam's intended message to show that the correct way of understanding it. So even though Shankaracharya, out of respect, didn't really touch the Bhagavatam hardly, certainly didn't get into the Bhagavatam and trying to explain it in some Mayavad way. But some of his followers did. And prominent amongst them was Punyaranya. And fortunately, his Bhagavatam commentary has been lost also. Yes. But Madhvacharya, you know, it sounds from here that he may not have even been intending writing a Bhagavatam commentary. Anyway, whether he intended it or not, when he wrote his commentary, it was particularly with this in mind, how to defeat these Mayavadis who have tried to comment on the Bhagavatam and confused people in the process. Okay, so now, subsection D is just some verses, actually most of them we've already read, but some verses from Srimad Bhagavatam, where Srimad Bhagavatam explains its own position. The idea throughout this whole section, from verse 19, one of the ideas at least, along with identifying, is the glorification of the Bhagavatam. How wonderful is the Bhagavatam? And glorification from different sources. Different Puranas, Matsya Purana, Skanda Purana, couple of verses dedicated to the Garuda Purana's glorification of Srimad Bhagavatam. Then how so many big Vaishnav Acharyas wrote commentaries and glorified the Bhagavatam. Himadri himself, very important Vedic authority, glorifies the Bhagavatam in a big way. Shankaracharya himself glorifies the Bhagavatam in the Govindashtakam. And Madhvacharya glorifies it. So now Srimad Bhagavatam glorifies itself. 24.2. Thus, the Bhagavatam itself appropriately states in the first canto, Sri Vyasadeva delivered Srimad Bhagavatam to his son, who is the most respected among the self-realized, after extracting the cream of all Vedic literatures and histories of the universe. We read that verse the other day. And in the 12th canto, Srimad Bhagavatam is declared to be the essence of all Vedanta philosophy. One who has felt satisfaction from its nectarian mellow will never be attracted to any other literature. And then 24.3. Again in the first canto, and this we've read, O expert and thoughtful men, relish Srimad Bhagavatam, the mature fruit of the desire tree of Vedic literatures. It emanated from the lips of Sukadev Goswami. Therefore this fruit has become even more tasteful, although its nectarian fruit was already relishable for all, including liberated souls. That's a very famous verse which we read the other day. And in the same canto, let me offer my respectful obeisances unto him, Shuka, the spiritual master of all sages, the son of Vyasadeva, who out of his great compassion for those gross materialists who struggle to cross over the darkest regions of material existence, spoke this most confidential supplement to the cream of Vedic knowledge, after having personally assimilated it by experience. We read this also. These statements imply that the opinions of Srimad Bhagavatam rule sovereign over all other opinions. So we've read virtually all of these verses before. I don't really intend sort of saying more about them, I don't think. Because I think, among other things, we don't have much time. And it's kind of self-evident, really. Okay, so then, E on page 40. The preeminent position of Shukadev Goswami. So here again, we're glorifying Srimad Bhagavatam, and Srimad Bhagavatam is being shown to be glorious. So this is very interesting strategy of Jiva Goswami's. One other way to show how glorious it is to show how glorious the speaker of it is, who in this context is Shukadev. Yeah, he is very exceptional. He is unique compared to the speakers of even the other Puranas. His realization is unique. Yeah. Okay, so let's read through these verses then. We'll read right through here. 25:1. It is a well-known fact that Shukadev was placed on the instructor's seat in the assembly of all sages. In other words, they put him on the Vyasasan above everyone, assuming the role of their guru. This is as described, this is from Srimad Bhagavatam. At that time, all the great-minded thinkers accompanied by their disciples arrived there. On the plea of making a pilgrim's journey, such sages verily sanctify a place of pilgrimage just by their presence. From different parts of the universe, there arrive great sages like Atri, Chayavana, Sharadvana, Rishtanemi, Bhrigu, and so on and so forth, including Dwaipayana, you see, and the great personality, Narada. Everyone's there, practically. Parasarama's there. Parashara's there. And Vyasa himself and Narada Muni. There are also many other saintly demigods, kings, and special royal orders called Arunadayas, a special rank of Rajarshi or saintly king, from different dynasties of sages. When they all assembled to meet the emperor, Parikshit, he received them properly and bowed his head to the ground. After all the rishis and others had seated themselves comfortably, the king, humbly standing before them with folded hands, told them of his decision to fast until death. Then the king said, "O trustworthy Brahmins, I now ask you about my immediate duty. Please, after proper deliberation, tell me of the unalloyed duty of everyone in all circumstances, and specifically of those who are just about to die." Then, after the king's query, at that moment, there appeared the powerful son of Vyasadeva, that Shukadev Goswami, who traveled over the earth indifferent and satisfied within himself. He did not manifest any symptoms of belonging to any social order or status of life. He was surrounded by women and children, and he dressed as if others had neglected him, which I think is a nice way of saying that he wasn't dressed at all. 25, part 2. Then the sages all rose from their seats to honor him. And finally, Shukadev Goswami was then surrounded by saintly sages and demigods. Just as the moon is surrounded by stars, planets, and other heavenly bodies, his presence was gorgeous, and he was respected by all. And let us just read 26.1 also. This is a very important point. This is extremely important, actually. Both Srila Vyasadeva and Narada were present. Although they were Shukadev's spiritual master and grand spiritual master, still, Srimad Bhagavatam, as it emanated from his mouth, seemed to them as if something they had never heard before. Thus, it is understood, Shukadev acted as preceptor, or in other words, guru, even for the two of them. It has been said that by being touched by Shuka's mouth, this fruit has become soft and full of nectar. That is Bhagavatam 113, famous verse, Nigama Kalpa, what is it, Tayo Galitam Phalam. Yeah. For this reason also, Srimad Bhagavatam is superior to all other scriptures. What we hear of the Matsya and other Puranas being the greatest is only relative. Indeed, why do we need to say any more? Srimad Bhagavatam is the exact image of Sri Krishna himself. So this is very nice, isn't it? We're all familiar with this, the scene here. Maharaj Parikshit arrived there on the banks of the Ganges or Yamuna, having just been cursed and just become aware of that. He had made up his mind. He had 7 days to live. He wanted to perfect his life and make the ultimate gain that he could from life. So he went there to that sacred place and found all these saintly people who are very qualified people, just the right people to tell him how to conclude his life successfully. So therefore, he appealed to them like that. Actually, they had all come because they knew that he was going to do that. It wasn't that he just appeared there on the banks of the Ganges, and there they were. Oh, a great assembly of sages. It's my lucky day. No, it wasn't like that. They all knew he was coming. They all knew this was what he was going to do. So they all quickly assembled. All the big sages, all the big demigods, all the big Brahmins, all the big saintly kings, they all came, not just some of them. They all came for that, to be with Maharaj Parikshit when he left his body. And then he appealed to them, "Here I am, please help me. Tell me, what is my duty now at the time of death?" They remained silent. And then, practically as if on cue, Shukadev Goswami just walked in completely like the total avaduta, surrounded by people who were basically just mocking him and thought he was some sort of idiot, you know, just to be the butt of jokes. But then they saw all these kind of village people. They saw here all these big sages, and Shukadev Goswami walks in. They all stand up. They don't all laugh at him or look the other way or something. They all stand up with great respect, even Vyas, even Narada Muni. And then they offer him, "Here, you sit on this, Vyasa-san." And he accepted that because Narada, Vyas, who is his own father and guru, and Narada, who is the guru of his own guru, they both said yes. They both indicated, "Yes, you sit there." And as the verse says, 26.1, when even Narada and Vyas, because they're great authorities on Srimad Bhagavatam, they're great authorities already. But when they heard it from Shukadev, they thought, "This is most amazing." Even though they're authorities in it, particularly Vyas, well, they're both authorities, but they both thought, "We have never heard anything like this." That doesn't mean that Shukadev concocted anything, but it is the principle of Shuka, the parrot. Prabhupada explains on a number of occasions, actually, in that verse 113, which is referred to here in 26.1, in the purport there, and in various lectures, Srila Prabhupada made the point that there is a certain phenomenon in life in general. That phenomenon is that if you have a mango or some other fruit, Prabhupada mentions a mango. Mango, nice ripe mango, good quality mango, is the king of fruits. But when one parrot comes and takes a peck or two, somehow or other, through that sweet, already wonderful mango becomes even sweeter. Yeah, it's not that the parrot has injected something, some sugar in or something like that, but it's just how it works. So, just like, this is a very important principle in Krishna consciousness, that when devotees get together and discuss Krishna, then Krishna consciousness, the philosophy, the pastimes, all these things, becomes even more ecstatic. You know, this is one reason why in Srimad Bhagavatam class every morning, we don't just read what Prabhupada said only, but the devotees comment. Because through their realizations, faithful realizations, then there is some extra sweetness is injected. Yeah. In the assembly of devotees, these topics become even more relishable, actually. So Shukadev, he is on such a high level. His realization is so nice. Just like Vyas, we read earlier how the Puranas, because Vyas is so elevated, his editing work and the insights and the way he did everything was so good that, therefore, because of his contribution, because of his work, the Puranas are outstanding. Not that he concocted anything, invented, made up some spectacular stories or something like that to attract people's minds. No, he just took what it is and presented it nicely as it is. But because of this principle of devotees expressing Krishna consciousness like that and imparting some extra special nectar, you know, in some subtle kind of transcendentally mystical way. So the Puranas are very special. And even on top of that, because Shukadev has done that, so Srimad Bhagavatam amongst the Puranas is very special. Yes, so this is a very interesting situation here that all these great personalities are there. He has already, you know, we may not have really noticed it so much, but already in 24.2, he has already been described as the most respected amongst the self-realized. And in 24.3, he has already been described as the spiritual master of all sages. So that was kind of, in a sense, setting the scene for the description we just read through. How Shukadev, he was accepted as guru, even not just by his own guru, but by whose guru's guru, who happens to be none other than Narada Muni himself. Yes, but is it true that Shukadev Goswami is Radharani's parrot? We have heard such descriptions. There are different sort of descriptions. We're going to be hearing description as we go on of his early days, very early days. But that's one thing we've heard. So Shukadev Goswami then. Prabhupada says, because of his input, Prabhupada says, it became doubly tasty. Doubly tasty, Srimad Bhagavatam. It was already relishable for all, including liberated souls, but it became doubly tasty. And let us then, well, just a little bit, in 26.1, he says that what we hear of the Matsya and other Puranas being the greatest is only relative. What that means is it's relative to other, certain other of the Puranas. In other words, if a Purana is in the mode of passion, and in it you see some statement that this Purana is the greatest Purana, then that means that it is probably greater than Puranas in the mode of ignorance. This is the basic idea. Relative. It's just relative to various other Puranas. It is not an absolute concept. And it just is in along the lines, as we were discussing yesterday a bit, of how in order to encourage people in the lower modes, then the different demigods are sometimes described as being the greatest, and so on and so forth. And Srimad Bhagavatam, he says, is the exact image of Sri Krishna himself. Well, that we have heard. The first canto is his feet. The tenth canto, then it goes all the way up. The tenth canto is his smiling face. And the twelfth canto is what? His 11th canto is his forehead. The 12th canto, I guess, is the top of his head or something like that. Yeah. Let us now try and finish 26 here. Some concluding confirmations of the unique importance of Srimad Bhagavatam. And in this way, we will conclude the Praman section. And we should all be convinced that Srimad Bhagavatam is definitely the best source of knowledge about the Absolute. 26.2. As said in the Bhagavatam's first canto, this Srimad Bhagavatam is as brilliant as the sun, and it has arisen just after the departure of Lord Krishna to his own abode, accompanied by religion, knowledge, etc. Persons who have lost their vision due to the dense darkness of ignorance in the age of Kali shall get light from this Purana, particularly this Purana. Therefore we see that this scripture is uniquely endowed with all good qualities. This is shown by such statements as completely rejecting all religious activities which are materially motivated. This Bhagavat Purana propounds the highest truth. And in the words of Muktaphala, that's by Vopadeva, and Himadri's Smriti, they both say, the Vedas, Puranas, and poetry give instruction like a master, a friend, and a lover, respectively. It's a very colorful way of putting things. The Bhagavatam, however, teaches in all three ways. And 26.3. So even if, as some people think, other Puranas are subordinate to the authority of the Vedas, Srimad Bhagavatam directly denies this idea in regards to itself. In other words, the Bhagavatam claims its own authority independently. Thus, its position is that of the highest Shruti authority, as is stated. How did it so happen that King Parikshit met this great sage, making it possible for this Shruti text for the pure Vaishnavas to be manifest? What we stated earlier, that first all the other Puranas were revealed, and then the Bhagavatam, is supported by the evidence of Sri Vyasadeva's and Narada's conversation in the first canto. In other words, this is the last word. This is the last word. So, what to note there? Let's see. Well, the Vedas, they speak like a master, Himadri and Vopadeva say. They dictate, you do this, or else you watch out. The Puranas, they're more gentle, like a friend. They tell stories. And they sort of couch things to be more easily assimilated and like that. And then there's some poetic works which may express things in very affectionate, like very intimate terms, like a lover, one's beloved. So Srimad Bhagavatam, though, it does all three. For example, it can get fairly tough if it wants. It can get pretty strong. Like at the end of the fifth canto, the hellish planets are described. You watch out. You better be Krishna conscious or else. Yeah. So there it's dictating. It can be friendly in so many places. Nice descriptions. Or even, like particularly in the tenth canto, very intimate, very personal, like this. So Srimad Bhagavatam speaks with all three voices, in this way indicating its supreme and all-encompassing position. It refers to itself as Shruti in 26.3. It says that this is the Bhagavatam. This is the Shruti text for the pure Vaishnavas. And the fact that it is actually the final word from the editor or author or whatever, Vyasadev, is made clear in the first canto anyway, that Vyas specifically did it as his final culmination of all his work. So what more could you need to say? What more could be said? Not much, really. Not much more needs to be said. So therefore we say that here the commentary is, the Praman section concludes by establishing Srimad Bhagavatam's unassailable position as the best source of knowledge. Any comments or questions? Yeah. We're going to talk about this. It all comes up, yeah. The birth of Shukadev Goswami and what he was like then and the transition he went through. Yeah, we're going to discuss that next week. Another point which Jiva Goswami makes in his own commentary is that Srimad Bhagavatam has the best editor, Vyas. It has the best speaker, Shukadev. And it has the best audience. They were all there. Anyone who was anyone amongst saintly people of any type, of all types, the demigods, the Brahmins, the saintly kings, the sages, and you name them. They were all there. By sending Shankaracharya? Well, as I understand, the reason why the Lord told Lord Shiva to appear as Shankaracharya and bewilder the people with Mayavad was to accelerate Kali Yuga. To accelerate Kali Yuga. Yeah. Yeah. Sorry? Oh, well, that's another thing. Establish the authority of the Vedas. Yeah, but that's another. But he wanted, the way I've heard it explained is that he wanted to accelerate the progress of Kali Yuga. Any other comments or questions? No, he's there. Vyasakir. Tomorrow, we'll go through 27 and 28 there. Or we'll try, put it that way. They're not so long. And then we'll also run through the questions for the test, which we're going to have on Monday, so you can prepare over the weekend. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki jai.